All right, it's 8:15 here on Sports Radio 1310 and 96.7 FM, The Ticket. You've got the Musers on a Wednesday morning. This segment we're going to spend talking about the Texas Jam. And I got to thinking about the Texas Jam because of the big music that's coming to this town in conjunction with the Final Four. Our buddy Tony Faye and company bringing to town Bruce Springsteen next weekend. The Killers.
Yeah.
Tim McGraw. They're going to be performing free concerts at Reunion Park. And who knows how many people they're going to get for those shows. I mean, We could have really huge crowds. So I started thinking about the Texas Jam and the massive crowds and the big event that was, because we haven't had a whole lot of crazy, wild, outdoor musical events in this town in a long time. And back in the late 70s and in the 80s, Q102 and the Zoo were the big rock stations here in town, and that's all they talked about, the Texas Jam, spelled, by the way, with two X's, T-E-X-X-A-S, Jam. And for months leading up to the Texas Jam, that's all that the DJs would be talking about. And the very first Texas Jam occurred in 1978, and it ran for the next 11 years, and most of the time at the Cotton Bowl, but sometimes held down in Houston. And a couple of years it was either at Rice Stadium or at the Astrodome. And you had acts like Van Halen and Journey and Aerosmith and Fleetwood Mac, Steve Miller Band, Boston, Heart, Rush, The Eagles, Foreigner, REO Speedwagon, Ozzy, Loverboy, just... It's a who's who of late 70s, early 80s rock.
Yeah. Metallica made it in there the last time.
Yes. Yeah, the very final 1988 Texas Jam, Van Halen, Scorpions, Dokken, and Metallica.
And Kingdom Come was the opening band.
Now, you went to three of these?
I saw every band at the 1988 Texas Jam. I went to the last three.
By then, it became Metal Fest.
I don't know if it was Metal Fest. Van Halen headlined two of those three. Is that metal?
No, but I guess the rest of them were.
No, it was harder
Kingdom
rock.
Kingdom Come, Metallica?
They're spares. Metallica, yes, but it was they were starting to become a little more mainstream, but it was still mostly hard rock. The year before had Aerosmith and Boston as the last two acts in 1987.
Now, I never felt cool enough to go to the Texas Jam. George, you did feel cool enough, but your parents wouldn't let you go.
I wanted to go so bad because all my friends were, and the thing was... Anything that was at the Cotton Bowl, I knew when I asked, the answer was going to be no. It didn't matter if it was the Who, the Rolling Stones, or in this case, the Texas Jam. And I was like the only one of my group of friends that didn't get to go.
Why did they hate the Cotton Bowl?
They just thought that bad things were going to happen down there because they would see the footage at night of Mick Jagger, you know, putting the hose between his legs and, you know, going like that. And they'd see people passing out and... People getting arrested, and they thought that it was just a bunch of hippies, and I was going to do drugs and become a hippie, so they wouldn't let me do it.
The first concert I ever attended at the age of 15 was the 1986 Texas Jam. My buddy Phil Gappa and I.
Made up name.
And my dad.
He went?
Drove us down there and dropped us off, like, on 2nd Avenue, right out in front of the fairgrounds, and we walked in by ourselves. And at about 11 o'clock that night, we walked back out onto 2nd Avenue, and my dad picked us up. Man. And I couldn't believe it happened. And it was a magical day and night
for me.
And you turned out okay.
I made it all
Not
right.
Not great, but
Not
okay.
Not great, but I'm
yeah,
all right.
You're kind of wheels off.
Never went. Never went. I heard it before. I could hear it, like, from 3 miles
Richardson?
Away. It's unbelievable.
Never had a desire to go?
No.
Even though you were in a band.
It just felt unavailable to me. Mm-hmm. It's like I just didn't go to concerts. Yeah. My parents weren't into footing that bill.
Well, you 13 know, bucks is all it was back in the
13
day.
13 buck
we were,
more than I had.
Yeah. That amazing in high school to see all that.
I was eating off my dad's Exxon card.
You know, there's not much out there on the history of the Texas Jam. There is a picture book that came out not too long ago. And coming out in May, there will be a documentary on the Texas Jam. And joining us now on the Ticket Hotline is the guy who's putting together and producing this documentary, and he's been working on it for a long, long time. His name is Brian Hedenberg. Morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
All right.
Doing well.
We're doing great. Brian is a DFW native, and the documentary is going to focus on the very first Texas Jam in 1978. And so how'd you get the idea to do this, and what has the documentary process been like for you?
Well, it actually wasn't my idea. I was brought into it later. It was actually a guy named James Austin. It was his idea, mm-hmm. and he directed it and really sort of inspired me to just help produce it. And then what we originally thought was going to be a very quick and painless undertaking turned out to be almost a decade long. And due to fighting with agents and legalities and people trying to keep us from not releasing it because they wanted to do their own thing. And it was an absolute nightmare, but we were able to finally finish it and get it out on iTunes in May.
So is there really good sounding audio? Because I mean, Q102 carried this live, I think, 1 year. They had some pretty sophisticated recording setups. Is there really good audio of some of these concerts?
Well, there was actually the only footage and audio that exists that I know of. It was from Q102, and then NFL Films was hired to come and film it. But when, of course, some of the news stations came in and did some B-roll, which we were able to get everything except from NFL Films, because apparently it was filmed without the consent of any of the bands. And so they wanted to try to release that years later. And many of the bands had been very disenchanted about being paid the right amounts, you know, and so on and so forth. There was a lot of drama with that. But basically, that footage has sat in 35-millimeter style in some warehouse for decades. Who knows if it's even any good anymore. So everything we got is the only thing that exists.
And in 1978, when the Texas Jam happened, there was some question, I guess, before that as to whether there'd ever be another big outdoor concert in the state of Texas because what had happened in Austin a few years earlier?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because a lot of people forget that Dallas really isn't that old. I mean, it's not compared to a place like New York or, you know, that's been around for hundreds of years. And so things like this were still relatively new to us. And in the early 70s, they had done a outdoor concert at the UT Field, and it was with the ZZ Top, and I think it was like 80,000 people. But they had destroyed the field so badly that they would never allow them to do that ever again in a stadium in Texas. I mean, even more so than now, Texas or football reigned supreme. I mean, it was religion, and that was sacred ground. So somehow, years later, I think it was 77, Louis Messina with Pace Concerts was watching a commercial about the Lone Star Beer sponsored Texas State Fair, and had called his partner, David Krebs, and said, I have this great idea. We're going to do this 3-day music event. It'll be the Texas World Music Festival, and we'll have all these bands. We'll do it at the Cotton Bowl. And these guys couldn't have been very, maybe mid-20s, late-20s, somehow convinced them to let them put on this concert. But they had to lay down plywood and black tarp all over the field. So in July 78, it was already over 100 degrees that day. On the field, it was like a frying pan. It was somewhere around 120, 130, and somewhere between 80 and 100,000 people. And they ended up pulling it off to where there were no injuries, no one was hurt, and it was a huge financial success. And that's what continued every year thereafter for 10, 11 years into Monsters of Rock and all the other stadium concerts. But it was because of Texas Jam breaking that mold, saying this is possible to pull off without disaster.
Yeah, I guess that's the that's the thing that stands out too, and that's what I would always make the B roll on the news was people passing out because of the heat. Having a concert outdoors in Texas in July is pretty crazy to begin with, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I meeting these guys, it was really funny to watch them reminisce. It's funny, you mentioned earlier about the double X's, which actually had to do with Krebs and Frank Marino, who was into numerology at that time and had called and said, oh, I found this license plate and it had two X's on it. What do you think? And he did the numbers and it all worked out and it was a good omen. But just having them reflect back on how hot it was, why they chose that time, and all the things that went into planning it. I mean, it was those things just don't happen anymore. They just don't. Whoever got to attend those, they were very, very lucky because other than like Lollapalooza or things like that, we'll just never experience anything like that again.
We're visiting with Brian Hedenberg. He's produced a Texas Jam documentary that's coming out in May and available on iTunes in May. Is that what you said?
Yes.
All right, and it's about the very first Texas Jam in 1978. And I'm looking at the lineup, and I'm wondering who the headliner was, because you had Van Halen and Ted Nugent and Aerosmith, and even Cheech and Chong were there.
Yeah, they had a lot of comedy acts in between each major act. Each band played, 45 minutes. And Aerosmith was technically the headliner, but they made Frank Marino go on after him, which was like at 2:00 in the morning. So considering that everyone had been there since 6 a.m. to get into the gates, by the time Frank went on, nobody was there. It was like maybe 10,000 people. Yeah. And, but Aerosmith was sort of pushed and promoted as the big headliner.
Whatever became of Blackstone, the band that won the statewide competition to get in there?
From what I understand, three of them are in Amarillo. They were never able to find the rest of their band. one of them, I believe, plays in a – Mark plays in a church band. Another one is Mike is a physical therapist, and the drummer does jazz fusion in California somewhere. I don't know. It's very
no talk of a reunion or anything.
Oh, I have no idea. We actually came across something about all these different bands claiming to have won this Battle of the Bands and playing, and so we actually did a separate documentary about that. Which will come out later, but we had to disassociate it with this documentary because we wanted to focus on the main acts that people would know. And it was just, this was easily an hour and a half documentary that we had to crunch down to 42 minutes because at the time we were trying to get it on VH1.
And doing the documentary, how many of the old performers did you get to sit down with, and what were their memories of that Texas Jam?
All of them except Atlantic Rhythm Section, Aerosmith, and Van Halen. Even though we have footage and interview footage, I wasn't able to meet with them. Aerosmith, basically, unless you're an A-lister or have a ton of money, they have no interest in talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Van Halen, either half the band's in rehab, or I think Dave is flying helicopters in New York. it's been 30 years, so... Everybody kind of different things. But what was really cool was to come across guys like Eddie Money and Hart and Journey, who were still out playing and are just the coolest people in the world. They have actually really good memory of what happened, and they would all sort of reflect on each other's shows that day or as much as they remember. Ted Nugent was probably the wildest interview. We asked him 10 questions. He gave us 2 hours of answers, half of which was about hunting in Africa. And I'm not really sure what that had to do with our questions.
So
it was good.
I was going to say, you still have, festivals and things like that. But as you mentioned, this just doesn't happen anymore at big stadiums. Why is that, do you think? With rock shows, anyway.
Well, I mean... I'll tell you, the guy who really opened my eyes to all of this, and he is just an encyclopedia of rock and roll, flat out, plain and simple, was Redbeard. And Redbeard explained at the end of this documentary, the last portion is why they don't happen and a lot of other things, but what he was sort of explaining was that the two main reasons these things don't happen is because, one, all the bands want a headline. And because of touring costs and gasoline and so on and so forth, they're all incredibly expensive. But the second thing that most people don't think about is insurance. And back in the 80s, to insure a concert like the Texas Jam was well over $1 million a day. Who knows what that would be today? And the only insurers in the world that would even consider insuring something like this would be like Lloyd's of London. And because they're the only one, they can claim or charge anything they want. And so when you add all these factors together, I mean, the Texas Jam was $12 to go to. That was the ticket price. It was all general admission. Today, we see tickets in excess of $200 to $500. And even that barely breaks even. We went from being a nation where the DJs picked their own music and being a very creative society three decades forward, where everything is corporately sponsored and traded like stocks. And we just don't have that creative freedom anymore. And the festivals and the rock shows are exactly like that. We went from something like the Texas Jam, where a bunch of guys in their 20s could pull off one of the coolest shows at the time, to where now, unless Coca-Cola and a dozen other brands are controlling it and charging $500 a ticket, even then they're barely breaking even. They just it's just the market of capitalism. They're just never going to be able to pull that off again.
It certainly was unique. All right, the documentary Texas Jam comes out in May, and it's on iTunes. And any other plugs you want to give for that documentary?
You know, it was such a, like I said, I mean, I think doing an inside documentary on Goldman Sachs would have been easier than pulling this thing off. It was a lot of fun. It really opened my eyes to how much this country has really changed when it comes to the business and rock and roll. And the people I've met were amazing, and I love the fact that I still stay in touch with them. And we're really excited to, you know, for people to get a peek into what it was like back in the day when rock and roll reigned supreme.
We look forward to it. Brian, thanks for the time this morning.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Brian Hedenberg. He is the producer of the Texas Jam documentary that's going to come out on iTunes in May. He mentioned Redbeard. I wanted to thank the legendary Redbeard for giving me Brian's contact info and putting me in touch with him. I told you what a thrill it was to get an email from Redbeard. That was very, very cool.
That's pretty huge.
And when I think of the Texas Jam, I think of Q102 and the Zoo and LaBella and Rhodey and Redbeard and all those DJs and how consumed we all were with the Texas Jam.
Yeah. I mentioned one year they tried to carry it live, and then I think they had some technical problems and things like that. But I swear I remember that. Remember like Live Aid, that was carried live on radio. Why don't radio stations do that anymore?
You remember when radio stations also used to do a concert replay?
Yes.
Like after the big show in town, they would then play all of these cuts in order of how the show went down.
Loved that.
That was so cool.
It was like a post game show you'd listen to.
It was like a big Q102 deal, I think, that used to do that always.
Yeah.
When did that stop?
When the ticket came on the air.
Q102 went away, I guess.
When did we really lose our rock stations? Mid-90s?
Q102 blew up in 1996 or 7, I believe. And that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we still have a few out there, but they've been bastardized a little bit.
Well, here in a week, we will have big free concerts in conjunction with the Final Four. Bruce Springsteen on that Sunday. And the Saturday will be Tim McGraw and the Killers. So that'll be kind of like the Texas Jam. Not quite.
Let's not forget Jub Jam.
We got Jub Jam.
It's only about a month away.
The heir apparent to the Texas Jam.
We're carrying on the Texas tradition.
And we're going to have more on the Texas Jam. Because the very final Texas Jam in 1988 featured the official vocalist of this show, Chris McKinley. He'll join us next with his stories from that event.